I thought of speaking something from Srimad Bhagavatam on what you all are doing this evening. Kirtan. Okay, I didn't know what the dance part was. I just finished. Speak something on the from Srimad Bhagavatam on the Kirtan part. Who's going to dance? You going to dance?
No, Ajay.
You're going to dance? Okay. Were you the dancer yesterday evening? So, same one?
No, different one.
Different one. Is that a profession or? Yeah? You're a professional dancer? Uh-huh. Where did you get training?
In India.
That style that you did yesterday, you learned in India?
Yes, ma'am.
Really?
But it's contemporary.
It certainly is. And dance teachers in India teach contemporary?
No, they teach both.
You just kind of adapted it
for the
audience.
Narrative, yeah.
All right. So what's on for tonight?
It's some appreciation of Vaishnavas.
And there's a song that goes with the dance?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. What time is that supposed to happen?
Just as your class is March.
Okay. Let's see how I'm doing, health-wise. It's very nice. I mean, how many here saw the drama yesterday? I've never seen a drama like that before. That had a little bit of everything. It had poetry. It had Bhagavad Gita. It had some violence. It had some serenity. It had some dance. And then a minstrel up on the balcony playing his ukulele and flute. It was really quite amazing. Anyway, so we're here for kirtan this evening and some dance. The Srimad Bhagavatam, we say that Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by, who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam? Sukadeva Goswami, right. But actually, Sukadeva Goswami doesn't even begin speaking until the second canto. So maybe he was a ventriloquist and he just spoke through a... No. He spoke and Sutta Goswami later reiterated, but beginning of Sukadeva Goswami speaking is in Canto 2, Chapter 1. And the very beginning part of what Sukadeva Goswami speaks addresses the importance of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam or the narrations of the topics of the Personality of Godhead and the chanting of Krishna's holy name. So he speaks like that, we'll go back to the first canto, in response to a question, actually two questions, by, who was the person who heard Srimad Bhagavatam? Right, Maharaj Pariksit. Right, Maharaj Pariksit. Maharaj Pariksit. Maharaj Pariksit was the grandson of the Pandavas. He was the son of Abhimanyu and Uttara. And Abhimanyu was the son of Arjuna. So we say grandson of the Pandavas, but more specifically the grandson of Arjuna. And he was the only remaining descendant of the Pandavas, because all of the other children of the Pandavas, the five sleeping sons and Abhimanyu, were all killed. So just the grandson, and even the grandson, Ashwatthama tried to kill. But Krishna personally protected. While Maharishi Pariksit was still within the womb of his mother, Ashwatthama was a very bad person. But Krishna protected. Abhimanyu, or Maharishi Pariksit was saved. And in the later chapters of First Canto, there's three or four chapters dedicated to appreciating Maharishi Pariksit. There's one whole chapter where there's the birth ceremony is being performed, and the astrologer Brahmanas, they're looking at his astrological chart and they're describing what his life is going to be like before it even happens. And such a glorious king. Whole chapter dedicated to... And it's very important because for Krishna consciousness to happen, there has to be two, a transmitter and a receiver. Qualified transmitter, qualified receiver, and then Krishna consciousness can happen. So first comes the description of the qualified receiver, Maharishi Pariksit. His life as a king is described, how he ruled. His childhood as he grew up is described. His checking of the personality of Kali when he heard that in my kingdom there's a person that's hurting a bull. He has a club and he's breaking the legs of a bull with his club. So he immediately left his comfortable palace with his whole army and went to challenge and confront the personality of Kali. That whole dialogue, very important section of the Bhagavatam. Because this is the age of Kali. And Maharishi Pariksit confronted him. And he could have, with his sword, he was the king. Powerful. He could have killed the personality of Kali. But Kali was very clever. He surrendered. And said, it's the duty of the king to give protection to one who surrenders to the king. So I surrender to you. All right, I won't kill you. And then it's described in one of Srila Prabhupada's purports that Maharishi Pariksit understood this is part of Krishna's plan. It's the age of Kali, and here's the personality of Kali, so I can't kill him because that interferes with Krishna's plan. It's the age of Kali. So he spared him for that reason also, in addition to he surrendered, so-called surrendered, but took shelter of the king and sought the king's protection. So the exchange between Maharishi Pariksit and the personality of Kali, where he could reside in his kingdom, wherever there's sinful activity. There's no sinful activity in your kingdom. All right, wherever there's hoarding of gold, because where there's hoarding of gold, then there'll be sinful activity.
Very good.
So then, very out of character circumstances described, where one fine day Maharishi Pariksit was off in the forest. He was practicing his Kshatriya skills in the forest. And we know that later on, Maharishi Pariksit didn't eat, drink water, or sleep for 7 days. that? On John Mashtami, do you fast? Yeah? Part of the day? Before breakfast, I mean. But some of us, we fast for Janmashtami. That's nice. And Gangor Purnima just happened. At least till the moon rises, the full moon rises, when Lord Chaitanya appeared. And many devotees fasted the whole day up until midnight. But he fasted 7 days. And no water either for 7 days. And no sleeping for 7 days. He wasn't an ordinary person. He had full control of his senses, but by influence of Krishna's internal potency, Maharaj Pariksit became overwhelmed with thirst, out of character, completely out of character. So he went in the middle of the forest searching for some water, and he found a brahmana in his little hermitage, little cottage. And so he went to the brahmana's place to receive some water. But the brahmana was in meditation, and so the brahmana didn't even recognize that the king had come. And then another completely out of character behavior, inspired by Krishna's internal potency, Maharaj Pariksit lost it. He became angry and felt insulted. He who was a Vaishnava quality, is he's very humble. Here's a brahmana in meditation. Yay! How wonderful Vedic culture is being upheld. No. I'm insulted. I'm the king. And what kind of hospitality, brahminical quality do you have? You can't even say hello and offer a basic courtesy, a place to sit and some refreshment, some water. So he left in anger. And then another out of character. He saw a dead snake outside the doorway, so he picked up the end with the end of his sword and draped the dead snake over the brahmin in meditation's shoulder as a garland. You deserve a garland of a dead snake. That's not Maharaj Pariksit. It's the internal potency of Krishna acting to create the next situation, which was when the son of the brahmana came home and he saw his father with a snake around his neck, and he found out, doesn't say how he found out, but he found out that that was done by the king. He cursed the king to die by the bite of a snake. A poisonous, such a venomous snake that just by the bite of the snake, his body would instantly burst into flames because the poison of this mystical, not just a snake, but a snake bird, a snake that flies. There's no such thing. Snakes move on the ground. And birds fly. But a snake bird is mystical. It was created by mystic power. It wasn't an ordinary snake. It wasn't an ordinary bird. It was a mystical creation by mantra. The Brahmin boy had learned this art of chanting mantra to create mystical things. But his father was very qualified, but the son was not so qualified. So Maharaj Pariksit was cursed to die. The brahmana, when he heard that his son had cursed the king, he felt terrible. But what to do, because the curse is already gone and it can't be taken back. So at least he wanted the king to know, you're going to die in 7 days. It was my son that did it, but at least you should know so you can prepare. Specifically, he didn't go to personally tell the king, because the king would have been very embarrassed. He was already embarrassed. And the king didn't go back and make amends with the Brahmana, because the Brahmana would have been very embarrassed knowing what his son had done. They were, in other words, they were respecting each other. Even this apparent insult and apparent curse to die exchange was going on. In their heart of hearts, they were humble and respectful towards each other. It's described when Maharaj Prakrit was returning back to the kingdom, he had one of those uh-oh experiences. Uh-oh. I did something really bad. And so something is going to come for that something I've done bad. I'm going to get a reaction. He was already prepared internally, such that when message came from the Brahmana via a messenger that my son has cursed you to die, he immediately accepted, so be it. He didn't think, oh, wait a minute, I have powerful Brahmins that can maybe counter the curse or neutralize the curse or do something. He just accepted it. This is the Lord's plan. So he gave up his kingdom. He turned the kingdom over, that is to say, to his son. His son's name? Janamejaya. And so Janamejaya became the next king. And Maharaj Prakrit took off his crown, his royal garments, and adopted the garments of a mendicant, and requested all the sages of his entire kingdom, which was the whole world, to come and offer him advice. So there's a section in the 19th chapter, the last chapter of the first canto, where the sages are assembled and Maharaj Prakrit puts forward two questions. And those two questions were, what is my duty? Same as Arjuna asks in Bhagavad Gita, what is my duty? How many people today think like that? They think, you know, how can I get ahead? How can I get that carrot? How can I get the gold? How can I, the fruitive objective, whatever it is? And then people fix their mind on that and they go for it. If the goal is Krishna conscious, that's good. The same principle works for Krishna consciousness. We should have a goal in Krishna consciousness. We're going to have a little gathering of some people who are going to come together sometime in the future. So the facilitator, you've heard this term icebreaker at the beginning of a gathering where people don't know each other so well. So there's an icebreaker so they can get to know each other a little bit. You just like little something, sharing something. And so the facilitator is going to ask this question. When you pray, what do you pray for? Then go around the room and ask each person to share. So, you know, like, what's in your heart? That's the question. When you're talking to Krishna, or you're calling to Krishna, what's in your heart? Very nice question. I'm really looking forward to that exchange. So, Maharaj Prakrit is asking, what is one's duty? Because a virtuous person wants to know what's right. That's what Arjuna wanted to know. In this very difficult circumstance, what's the right thing to do? A virtuous person asks himself that question regularly. But then you need guidance how to know the answer to that question. Here's Maharshi Pariksit, the qualifications of Maharshi Pariksit, a whole chapter describing, but still he's asking, what's my duty? What's the duty of a person who's about to die? Or, for that matter, all of my citizens, who I was formerly the king of, they're also about to die. Today or tomorrow, we're all about to die. So what's our duty? What are we to do with this, the balance of our human form of life? And the second question was, what is that subject matter that one should always hear, chant, and remember? Shrotavya kirtitavyascha dyeya pujas cha nityada. So then what happened? The sages got into a big quarrel. You should do this, you should do that, you should do the other thing. No, no, none of those things. You should do this other thing, you should do this other thing. And they just, it was mayhem. Because they're sages, but they themselves weren't qualified. They were elevated in certain ways through their austerities or their cultivation of knowledge or their sacrifices or their something that gave them merit, sukriti. But they were also, it was not properly guided. So specifically, the Bhagavatam describes, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary explains, they couldn't agree. You know, you get a bunch of people together and say, you know, what should we do? Well, different opinions. Then Shukadeva Goswami appeared. And these sages, they had never seen Shukadeva Goswami before. In fact, the only one that had seen him before was his father and mother, and he was 16. How old are you?
10.
How old are you?
5.
10 plus 5 is 15. He was 16. And he just left home. And he went traveling about here and there, clothed, it says in the Bhagavatam, by the four directions. He was so situated in transcendence, he was totally neglectful of external things, like clothes or anything. He appeared like a madman, an avaduta. And so as he was moving about like that, the children, they didn't understand. So they were laughing and making fun and following around and like that. So when he entered into the assembly of the sages, there was this whole entourage following behind him, laughing at him. But all the sages immediately stood. Very elder, wise, learned, elevated, saintly personalities. Just being in Shukadeva Goswami's presence, they felt, whoa. They'd never seen him before. But immediately, this is part of Vedic culture. We don't find it too much in the West. But when, you find it in courtrooms, when the judge comes in, everybody stands. Please don't make the mistake of not standing, because you could be arrested. It's a legal offense. You must stand in respect of the judge. So anyway, that's Vedic culture. A respectable person comes, enters into your presence. You should stand, or depending on who that personality is, pay obeisances. But at least stand to show respect. This is Vedic culture. So they all stood. And immediately, spontaneously, in addition to honoring him, they offered him an elevated seat to sit. And Shukadeva Goswami, having been seated, was immediately approached by the king and honored by the king. And he asked the same questions of Sukadeva Goswami, the same two questions. What's your duty when you know you're about to die? And what is that subject matter that you should hear, chant, and remember always? Those are the questions he asked, and that's how the first canto ends. And the second canto begins with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's the first verse of Canto 2, Chapter 1. That's it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then Shukadeva Goswami speaks in text number 2. And Shukadeva Goswami expresses he starts with detachment, nivritti, detachment from, just as the verse that we were reading from Lord Kapila Day this morning, detachment from the material conception of life. If you want to know what your duty is, in any circumstance, facing death or any circumstance, you have to let go of the material conception of life. So, but for example, I'm holding on to cartels. And supposing I'm thirsty and I want some water. I have to let go of the cartels in order to reach for the water. Similarly, for the mind to hold a spiritual conception of what duty is, you have to let go of the material conception. You can't grasp, you can't receive spiritual conception as long as you're holding on to material conceptions of life. My identity is whatever. I am this body, and with this body comes these designations. I am this kind of person, etc., etc., etc. It's true that we have bodies, and it's true that we have a psychophysical nature given to us from birth and further implicated through the course of however long our life has been going on up to this point. But that's not our identity. So the material conception is being addressed by Maharaj Pariksit. He says that the subject matter, hearing about Krishna, anything, your question is wonderful, actually two questions. Your questions are wonderful because they're in relation to Krishna. Because anyone, even the question, what to speak of the answer, the question itself is wonderful because it will purify that material conception. Just hearing of, even if you're holding on to a material conception of life, supposing we think something about who we are with some material conception. Hear about Krishna anyway, because gradually that subject matter of Krishna is far more attractive than the material conception of who we think we are. And it's very powerful and it's purifying. It will gradually cleanse. Maybe too gradually if we hold on too tight. The willingness to let go is also important. He says, those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Then he speaks something not very complimentary about those people. The lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night either sleeping or in sex indulgence, and the daytime either making money or maintaining family members. They're wasting their valuable human form of life in pursuit of material sense enjoyment. That's greatly unfortunate. Those persons don't understand the purpose of life or how to utilize the valuable form of life. But then he speaks of what they should do. That's what they shouldn't do. So just these two verses. First is speaking the importance of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. O descendant of King Bharata, one who desires to be free from all miseries must hear about, glorify, and remember the personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul, the Controller, and the Savior from all miseries. The word that's used to address the Supreme Lord is Mukunda, one who gives liberation from the clutches of material existence. The mission of this human form of life is to become free from the bondage of material existence. And there's one who can give that. His name is Mukunda, the giver of that freedom, release from material bondage. So that's preceding the verse that speaks about chanting. So here's the chanting verse, the one that I wanted to speak about. All that was just a warm-up to get to this verse. The highest perfection of human life, achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic power, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty, is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. And how is that made possible? That very Srimad Bhagavatam I shall recite before you, Maharaj Parikshit, because you are the most sincere devotee of Lord Krishna, one who gives full attention and respect to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, achieves unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord. Again, the giver of salvation. You want it? Here's how to get it. Hear with rapt attention, undivided attention, very carefully, this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and release from the clutches of material existence is yours. It happened. It's a byproduct. Then, maybe some of you are familiar with this Sanskrit. I'll recite the verse. It's text 11. Etan nirvidyamananam icchatam akato bhayam yoginam nripanirnitam harir namanukirtanam. And the translation, O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied. So this end, that end, or in the middle. Take your pick. It's something like another verse that's in the second chapter. Akama sarvakamo va mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena. You know that verse. So whether you're at this end, that end, or somewhere in the middle. Akama, you have no desire. Sarvakama, you have all desire. Mokshakama, you want liberation. No material desire, but liberation from material desire. Whatever your position is. Tivra bhakti, very enthusiastic devotional service. And the beginning of that devotional service is mentioned here. Hearing the holy name. In fact, it says, constant. 5 hours is, that's the beginning. Constant. Maharaj Briggs said it was 7 days and seven nights. I think Ramabhadra's plan for the Rath Yatra is to invite kirtan singers from all around the world and have 108 hours of non-stop kirtan, not just a 24 hour, but 108 hours. Bibi Govinda Maharaj, Dindadumna Maharaj, and you know, like the cast of great stars. 108 hour kirtan. Stay tuned for Rath Yatra time. Get lots of rest before then. Have your get your hands ready for your Vrindanga playing. Constant chanting. And so these the Sanskrit words nirvidyamananam etan nirvidyamananam. The person that doesn't have any desire for material happiness. I don't want material shelter. Then ichatam. Icha means desire. I have all kinds of desires. Then those that are self-satisfied, that's like the transcendentalist monist. They're interested in finding happiness within minus Krishna. What's that? Brahman realization. Where there's not tinged with material attraction, but not yet full shelter of Krishna. So these three classes of people, Shukadeva Goswami says, it doesn't matter what their position is. They should engage in chanting the holy name. So I'd like to read a little bit Prabhupada's wonderful purport. Shukadeva Goswami in this verse recommends the transcendental chanting of the holy name of the Lord. By offenseless chanting and hearing of the holy name of the Lord, one becomes acquainted with the transcendental form of the Lord, and then with the attributes of the Lord, and then with the transcendental nature of his pastimes, etc. Here it is mentioned that one should constantly chant his holy name after hearing it from authorities. This means that hearing from the authorities is the first essential. Hearing of the holy name gradually promotes one to the stage of hearing about his form, about his attributes, his pastimes, and so on. And thus the necessity of chanting of his glories develops successively. Just like kirtan is the entry point, and following kirtan is then further description of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just like this verse, it's the other way around. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but the entrance into the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention is hearing of the holy name. And so it's the package that Prabhupada gave us. We have kirtan, and then in the temple, there is worship of the deity. And then there's kirtan, and then there is hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then prasadam. And that's our process. Just like we have commonly with programs. We have kirtan. Have class and RT with kirtan. Then prasadam. It's very... Besides it's very nice, it's scripturally, there's a scriptural foundation for it. The chanting, absorption in chanting, as you're attempting to do this evening in honor of Gaura Purnima, is enhanced by also then eagerness for hearing the topics about Krishna. Because topics about Krishna, just naturally, they further attract one to the qualities of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, and Krishna's devotees. because like hearing about Shukadeva Goswami or Maharaj Parikshit, it's as good as hearing about Krishna, because they're in relation to Krishna. And just hear what Shukadeva Goswami has to say. Chant Krishna's holy name. And Prabhupada's purport, following the line of disciplic succession. Same thing. This process is recommended not only for the successful execution of devotional service, but even for those who are materially attached, according to Shukadeva Goswami. This way of attaining success is an established fact concluded not only by him, but also by all other previous acharyas. Therefore, there is no need of further evidence. The process is recommended not only for the progressive students of different departments of ideological success, but also for those who are already successful in their achievement as fruitive workers, as philosophers, or as devotees of the Lord. So, the 5-hour kirtan that you scheduled in honor of Purnima is perfectly in line with the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. This second canto is... when Prabhupada was translating section of the Srimad Bhagavatam by section, he made the arrangement that a certain number of volumes would be printed, enough for the devotees to read and to distribute. And then the next volume, and the next volume, and the next volume, and the next volume. But when he got around, the middle of the third canto, and book distribution was roaring, he went back and made huge printing of 3 sections of Srimad Bhagavatam because of their importance. One of them was first canto part 1. Because those early chapters of the first canto, then it was, this one volume was 3 parts. So part 1 was describing the process of devotional service in a summary way. A huge mass production of that first canto part 1. And then another was second canto part 1. Because the unfolding of the stages of bhakti and these preliminary instructions of Shukadeva Goswami, that's what you find. And then the first part of 6th canto Srimad Bhagavatam. And the first part, and I hadn't read the 6th canto, I was still reading the earlier cantos, so I didn't really understand why Prabhupada picked 6th canto part 1. But in that 6th canto part 1, same thing, the theology of the holy name is described. The Ajamila story. Ajamila? Ajamila. He was rescued by the Vishnu Dutas because he called his son's name, who he just happened to call Narayan. And so that whole presentation is made by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit to explain how persons can be saved from the reactions of their sinful activities and thus having to experience hellish existence in the lower planets, because that was discussed in the 5th canto. But anyway, here in the 2nd canto, right in the very beginning of Shukadeva Goswami's instructions, there's this singular importance of hearing the topics of Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, and hearing the chanting constantly, hearing and chanting with absorption in the holy name. Chanting of the holy name cleanses the heart, qualifies us, just as Prabhupada describes in the purport here, to become further attracted to that person whose name we're chanting. So to hear about Krishna's form and his qualities and his pastimes, and absorb the mind through that entryway, starting with chanting, into further absorption in the pastimes of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the loving exchanges that Krishna has with his loving devotees, so that we become attracted ourselves to return to the spiritual world. I have a problem with my knee, a little medical problem. So I went to a physical therapist because the knee doctor said, you don't need surgery, you need physical therapy. Okay, no surgery, physical therapy. The first thing the physical therapist said was, what is it that you're hoping to achieve through physical therapy? So, I said, well, I want to be able to walk without limping. But I thought about it a little bit more, and I didn't say it, but this is what I was thinking. I want to be able, next year, when I go to Vrindavan, go all the way around Govardhan Hill. 16 miles or whatever it is, 23 kilometers, whatever the distance is, and not think about my knee, but think about Krishna, not feel pain. So between now and Kartik next year, I'd like to be able to walk around Govardhan Hill without any problem. Because circumambulating Govardhan Hill is ecstatic. There's something very, 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 so many very wonderful spiritual potency in Govardhan Hill, and circumambulating Govardhan Hill is so wonderful, and hearing the glories of Krishna's pastimes that he displayed at Govardhan is so wonderful. I want to be able to do that. Having a spiritual aspiration is good. I remember reading a Back to Godhead article long ago where Prabhupada was explaining Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks about Nathanam Najanam Nasundarim Bhavatam Vajagadisha Kame Mama Janmani Janmanishvare Bhavatad Bhakti Rahaitaki Twain, which means I don't want this, that, and the other thing. I don't even want liberation. So I don't want something material, and I don't want liberation. I just want your devotional service. So in this Back to Godhead article, Prabhupada was explaining, that's Lord Chaitanya's position. Our position is, we should want to be with Krishna. We should have a desire to go back to Godhead, be with Krishna. And when you become very advanced by that strong desire to be with Krishna, then you can be with Krishna wherever you are, in heaven or in hell. Doesn't matter. Svarga apavarga narakeshu apito yarta darshanam. One can be equally disposed for whatever situation Krishna wants to put you in. Then it's okay, because Krishna wants to put you in that situation. Like Maharaj Pariksit, that he did this awful thing. What he did was very bad. Insulted a brahmana very badly, and he accepted the reaction because somehow that's Krishna's plan. If our lives can come to the stage that whatever Krishna's plan is, the answer is yes, even before Krishna says what the plan is, the answer is yes, whatever it is, because Krishna wants it. So whatever it is that Krishna wants, that's what I want. From our position, presently, we should want to go back to Godhead. We should want to be with Krishna once again. It's good. That's not a material desire. It's a spiritual desire. And chant with that disposition to become